Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is 8 o'clock. It is Thursday, February 25th. This is LA Talk Radio, and you are listening to The Writer's Block. I'm your host, Jim Christina, sitting in studio tonight with the lovely and charming Russell Avison.
Good evening,
Jim. And Bobby Jean Bell, of course, has got her her concert series tonight, so we'll be missing her, and I hope she has a really good... I think she's doing some Western bebop of some sort tonight.
Western bebop?
Western bebop, yeah, I think. I don't know exactly what it is. I'm going to have to probably look some up on YouTube and figure it out. I heard you yesterday on my daughter's radio show.
Yes.
Yes.
We had a grand time.
It was so much fun. For those of you who don't know, my daughter, Margaret, has a radio show in North Carolina. Maggie has a radio show in North Carolina called Hump Day Dog Show. And she talks about everything dog training, more than you ever really wanted to know, unless you got a really backwards dog. And Russ, of course, is a world-famous dog trainer. And you notice I threw that in there.
World-famous.
World-famous. And he was on her show yesterday for the hour, and it was extremely interesting. Let's now go to The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley and by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall, California, and Target Freight Management. Well, you know, we talk about Target Freight every show, and we mentioned they have a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. But have we ever mentioned before that TFM Truckload gets your freight there every time, on time, no muss, no fuss, at the rates you need for your transportation bottom line? Call today. 1-844-653-7789. Tell them you heard it here in The Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you. And you know, Russ, while I'm at it, if you're an LTL shipper, or if you're an LTL shipper out there listening to
us. I could be.
You could be. You're probably looking for the best rates at the lowest hassle possible. Call Target Freight. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today. Their number is 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You won't be sorry you did. I use them, and I've never been sorry that we did. Tonight, we have a great show coming for you. We have
As always,
we have a wonderful lady that's staying up late for us in North Carolina, and we have Henry Park calling in tonight with his latest blog. And we're waiting on Henry. Henry, dial.
Hey, while we're waiting for him, just
sure.
Quick, you had that phone number, 844? I've not heard of that.
That's another
that area
844
code.
Is another toll-free number.
When did they start with those?
A while back.
Oh.
They run out of 800s.
I pulled my head out of
the while same. I'm at it, if you want to call in and talk to our guest tonight, the number here is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Henry, we're waiting on you. Are you there? Yes, he is, and he's calling in. Good evening, Mr. Park. Henry. Oops. You know what I have to do? I have to put this up. Henry, are you there?
Hello, gentlemen.
Oh,
hey,
hello.
Henry.
Henry, how are you?
Doing.
Okay, we're doing good. How are you doing?
Jim's having a difficult time over there.
I just got back from seeing The Revenant.
Uh-huh.
I feel like I've been beaten up by a bear. or worse. But it's a wonderful movie. You know, 12 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, Best Actor, Director, Supporting Actor, Cinematographer, and Hateful Eight is nominated for 3. You know, this is a great year for Westerns. You know, Best Supporting Actress, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Best Cinematography, and Best Score by the maestro of the Italian Western score, Ennio Morricone.
Right.
Did you know that he's going to be getting his star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame tomorrow?
I heard that. In fact, I think I heard it from you.
Then it must be true. Or
then it must be true.
Repeated.
It must be. Hey, you know, I saw Forsaken on Saturday.
How do you like it?
I loved it. Great movie. The interplay between Kiefer Sutherland and Donald Sutherland is absolutely just wonderful. I'd never seen them act together before, especially in the same scene.
Right.
It was really, really good.
I thought it was just wonderful, and it's a wonderful thing to see on a screen. It's not probably going to be on theaters all that long, so folks really ought to rush out to see it that way. I mean, it's fine on a video, but it's there's so much beauty there that you will miss on a smaller screen. Oh, and wasn't Demi Moore great?
Yes, she was. She was.
She really has matured into quite an actress.
Yes, she has. I actually saw it on Amazon Prime.
Uh-huh.
Ah, so, you know, $4.99, and I can watch it for 3 days in a row.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
He's a slow learner.
I know.
let me just throw in for anyone who is interested in seeing Ennio Morricone get his star, that'll be at 11:30 in the morning right in front of Grauman's Chinese Theater. Although I don't know if he'll attend, I don't know if he's in the country yet, but they're definitely expecting him for the Oscars.
Really?
Yeah. Well, because, you know, he's nominated, then why not?
Well, yeah. It's,
right.
It's a free dinner.
Well, I'm actually posting the roundup on Monday instead of Sunday because everyone's going to be watching the Oscars anyway.
Oh, sure.
By the way, what three Westerns have won Best Picture?
Unforgiven.
Unforgiven, yeah, I knew that one.
Right.
Best Picture, Westerns. God, Henry, I usually get you, but you may have me tonight.
Well, the next one is pretty easy, Dances with Wolves,
oh,
1990.
Okay. Right, okay.
But before that, well, I have to go all the way back to 1931 in Cimarron with Richard Dix and Irene Dunne.
Oh, my God. Are they having a
been
showing?
There's a lot of space in between.
Yeah, no kidding. Are they having a showing of that someplace?
Not that I know of.
Okay, then. So what's on the blog this week, Henry?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Now, I was going to talk about Forsaken, but we did that.
Yes.
And it's a lovely picture.
It is.
And I will be reviewing it in the Roundup on Monday. And I'll also be reviewing a new book, Riding the Hollywood Trail, Volume 2 by Charlie LeSwerve, who is the official film historian for the state of Arizona. I didn't even know states had official movie historians.
I didn't either.
But they do, and he's it.
Yeah, I think he told us the story of how he got that when he was on the show.
Oh, I forgot you had him on. Right.
Right.
He's
a wonderful, wonderful
my
guest.
Review of that book, which is, you know, his first one was all about the great B-Western movies, and Volume 2 is all about the early years of made-for-TV Westerns, and
right.
focuses on Hopalong Cassidy, Gene Autry, Roy Rogers, and The Lone Ranger, among others. And I'll be finally running the interview I keep threatening to run with Euro-Western star Crispian Belfrage. And if you haven't picked up the current True West, the March issue, which is just full of wonderful articles, not counting my own, because of, you know, Buffalo Bill Conquers Paris, The Lost Interview with the Younger Brothers, all sorts of great stuff. My article looks at four fine independent Westerns, The Keeping Room, C-Bar, Diablo, which stars Clint Eastwood's son Scott Eastwood, and The Price of Death. And I had the pleasure of posing questions to the great James Drury of the Virginian for What History Has Taught Me, which is in the back of the magazine.
Oh, James Drury. Where did I first see him in? Ride the High Country.
Very good, yes. It was a wonder. It's funny what a nice long career he had as a villain before he got to play
Exactly. Exactly.
And anyhow, you can find that and everything else I do at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Henry, you are awesome. Thanks for checking in. We'll talk to you week after next.
I look forward to it.
Okay,
good
bud.
Night, gentlemen.
Take care. Bye-bye, Henry.
Right, you too. Bye-bye.
On tonight's show, we have...
That would be right now.
That would be right now. We yes. have a young lady... from Asheville, North Carolina. This is her very first novel. And she had a successful career as a VP for marketing for Viacom, and she was president of Charters Marketing. That sounds almost like it's the same person, but we'll go from there. An award-winning advertising agency. And I'm going to let her pretty much tell you about the rest of her stuff. If you would, please welcome Ms. Jean Charters.
Hello,
Gene, you with
Gene.
Us? Gene, you with us? Hello? Are you with us?
Did we lose her?
I don't. It doesn't look like. Oh, resume call. Here we go. Gene, you with us?
I am.
Oh, there we go. Yay. Okay. I was afraid there. I just almost hung up on you.
Oh, no. No, I was afraid you had too.
Oh. Well, I don't know if you caught your bio, but we talked about your VP of marketing for Viacom and president of Charter's marketing. That sounds like it's a little bit of nepotism going on there. Of course, I believe that was probably you.
Yeah, it was me.
Oh, okay. And,
yeah, that was me.
And this would be your very first novel.
It is my very first novel, yeah. I always wanted to, you know, I always wanted to write a novel, but I was the single mom of four daughters, and so I really had to make a living for a lot of years there, you know, get them through school and everything, and trust me, when you, you know, your first novel, you're not going to make money, and so, you know, I worked in television, and I did become a VP of marketing for Viacom, and then I started my own advertising agency, and when that was, you know, when I was finally able to stop doing all that, I thought, okay, now it's now or never, let's go. So I started writing.
That's a good pastime, I guess.
Yeah.
I do it.
Well, I have to ask you, Gene.
This is Russ.
Yes, hello.
Hello, Russ.
Hi. You know,
are you a dog trainer?
I am.
Oh, boy, I've got a dog.
Well,
he's probably going to start barking soon.
And for the right price, I can come out to North Carolina.
Let's go to bed, Mom.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's right. It's kind of late out your way.
Well, you know, my daughter trains dogs in North Carolina.
I know, and my daughter's in California.
Well, there you go.
So, anyway, I wanted
to
ask you.
Where is she?
Oh,
where is she in North Carolina?
Raleigh-Durham.
Raleigh-Durham, okay, yeah. Well, I'm in Asheville.
Right, you're the gateway of the Great Smokies.
Yeah, I am. Right in the Great Smokies. It's gorgeous.
Yep.
And then where's your daughter in California?
Santa Cruz.
Oh, she's up north.
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
up in the hoity-toity yeah. part of town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I decided, it was funny, I got into, when I was living in New York, I got into, there was something called the New York Writers Institute. It was under the direction of William Kennedy. And he had a juried workshop that he opened up. I saw about it in the newspaper. So, you know, I submitted some writing, and I was thrilled to get into it because it's only 10 people. And it was taught by William Montague, who was then the poet laureate of Ireland. And he said something that I think is kind of fascinating, and it kind of led me in the direction of my novel. He said, write what you don't know about what you do know.
Explain that.
Yeah. I'm sitting here squeezing my eyes closed trying to figure this one out. All right, explain.
Okay, think about it. It's important. It's a good one. It really is. Like, take something you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, anything that you know quite a bit about, but there are still always an awful lot of things that you don't know about that subject.
Sure, that require research.
And, yeah, and that's called fiction. It's like, fill it out and imagine, you know, if someone had taken a different turn on that corner, how different would their life have been? And I found that a fascinating approach.
Okay, so how did that lead you then to write about Irish immigrants in Boston in 1840s?
Yeah, the way that happened was that I had grown up, I grew up in Ohio, and I grew up listening to my mother and my aunts talk about a girl named Mary Boland, and in fact, that was my great-grandmother, and for some reason, they had a when they spoke of her, they sounded pretty mystical. And of course, being a little girl with a, you know, healthy imagination, it really caught me. And the thing was, though, there were no pictures of her. There were no records of her. Nobody knew anything about her. All I knew was her name. And so then, when I was really, you know, when I was about six, I started having a recurring dream of a very pretty, strong young girl riding a horse bareback along the seacoast of Ireland. It was like a chestnut-colored horse, you know, beautiful, big, tall horse. And she had long red hair that was streaming behind her as she rode along the seacoast, and I came to think that was Mary Boland. That was my great-grandmother. And a little bit later, she would come to me in dreams, and she'd say, "Tell my story." So, you know, that was kind of peculiar. But then when this guy said, "Write what you don't know about what you do know," that became, boy, I could take that character and I could take what I thought she looked like and I could take her spirit and I could make up her story. And that's how I happened to write Shady Gold.
Hmm. Well, this is, I finished the book today.
Oh,
so
you did.
It's really fresh in my mind. And I think Russ finished it today.
Oh, wait, I'll go better. I started it and finished it today.
Wow.
I did. I sat down for 4 hours and I read it. And I will tell Jim and I both had the same original thought.
Right.
That, wow, this is kind of difficult to get into.
Right.
Until you get into it and then you can't stop.
All of a sudden, it becomes magic.
Yeah, I know. I've heard that a lot.
Yeah, and I don't know if you felt that when you were writing it, but about a third
I thought it was a piece of garbage, frankly, until I got the galleys.
Uh huh.
And I was reading the galleys, you know, the final thing before it goes to print.
Right.
And I was reading it, and I thought, boy, this is pretty good. Honestly, because I just didn't know. I didn't know that it was that great. And I think it's a wonderful story. I love it.
I do too. And this is how I picture her. I picture her as being about 5'5", slight, thin, fiery red hair, alabaster skin, piercing blue eyes, mm-hmm. and the most ingenious Irish lilt that you ever want to have.
You got it pretty good, except for the eyes. Her eyes were not blue.
Oh,
green?
I know, sorry.
Brown?
My eyes are blue, if that helps. But her eyes, her mother's eyes were beautiful blue eyes.
Right.
She talks about that, you know, she doesn't think she's pretty. In fact, she is quite pretty, but, you know, she doesn't think she's pretty. And
right.
She talks a lot about that her eyes are the color of peat, whereas, you know, the mother had these beautiful blue eyes
right,
and everything.
Right. Her mother's like a black Irish with the black hair and the
right.
deep blue eyes
right.
and the white skin.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's like me.
Oh, that's like you? Oh, okay.
That's like me, yeah.
Okay.
I look a lot like that.
I was reading the book and there was one thing I just had a problem with, and I write dialogue all the time. It took me a long time to get into the brogue. I write Irish brogue, but I don't write it to that extent. I mean, you're writing it from the 1840 standpoint, and it's very
right.
hard to wade through. And I can
right.
imagine people who actually lived back then that didn't speak Irish, that had to listen to these people and decipher what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I'm sure. Yeah.
Where did you learn
I'll tell
that?
You, the first time I ever went to Ireland, I was sitting in the Gate Theater, which is a wonderful theater in Dublin, and I was seeing this magical play called April Bright. But honestly, I don't think I understood a word that the actor said until the second act.
You use some words in there that I have never, ever, ever heard before. And I'm going to assume that most of them mean silly or you're kind of dumb or whatever. But they say I should have outlined some because they're thrown into conversations. And I'm thinking,
right.
I'm looking for a glossary because I don't know what these things mean. I just finished a book about Cajuns. And I've
right.
wound up having to put Cajun translations in the back of the book because everybody's going, what does this mean? What does this mean?
Yeah, you know what? I should have done a glossary. I really should have. I realized that.
Well, that's okay. So you can always do it again.
I know I can. I could do it in the next printing, and I think I would do a glossary because I didn't think I threw that many Gaelic words in, you know? But, you know, I tried to throw in words so that they were pretty much understandable in the context of the sentence.
They were, but I did not have any understanding of the word. The context,
no,
yes.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
No, you
yeah.
probably wouldn't. But yeah, those words are the old, you know, the old Irish language.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I thought the story was phenomenal. And I noticed at the end of the book you left it wide open for more stories to come.
For the what? For
you left it wide open for more stories to come.
Oh, yeah. This is a trilogy.
Oh, yeah. Now, the next one is called what?
Yeah.
The next Pardon one. Me? The next one is titled what?
I'm sorry, say again?
The next one is
The next
what?
One is called Lace Curtain.
Okay.
And the third one will be called Silk Stocking.
Ah.
And I'd like to explain why.
Okay.
As when I was a kid growing up in Ohio, I lived in a super, really an Irish town. And I'm 100% Irish blood. And anyway, in our culture, in that Irish-American culture, there were like three levels of social classes. And, obviously the lowest level, the least well-off, were called shanty Irish. So shanty gold is a shanty Irish girl who kind of like an alchemist, you know, spun gold out of her life. Lace Curtain is like middle class Irish, and that'll be the middle book, and I'm almost finished with that. And then the third one is like when the Irish Americans get rich, and that's called Silk Stocking Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like the Kennedys, people like that. That was the wealthy crowd. So I really want to show the way American culture in those days, and even now, you know, the way, okay, you think if I get, you know, more wealthy as I move along, my life is going to be better. But in Lace Curtain, that's not the case. I'll tell you that. That woman who will be Mary Boland's daughter does not have quite the good outcome that Mary Boland has.
Hmm.
So I just wanted to, you know, there were a lot of things going on in society back then that affected women, and a lot of it was negative.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the women were looked upon as second-class citizens. I mean, you bring that out very strongly in this
yeah.
book. You touched on, because you touched on the your women's rights.
Mm-hmm.
You touched on the immigrants and the problem with there were too many Irish coming into Boston, and so they I remember you had that you talked about the signs and all the stories. Mm-hmm. The NINA signs, you know, no Irish yep. Need apply,
NINA, no Irish need
right.
apply
right.
And that was absolutely true. Yep.
Right, and the coffin ships.
As a matter
ships.
Of fact, they closed up the northeast ports to the Irish at a certain point, like I think at about 1880. No, this was set in 1849. It was probably about 1860. And so the Irish went down to Savannah, Georgia. That's where the ships landed. And if you ever go to, you want to have a blast on St. Patrick's Day, go to Savannah, Georgia. It's wild.
Oh, I'll bet.
Yeah.
I've been to Savannah, but not on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, well, it's quite the party.
Well, yeah. Any place a bunch of Irish get to, it's quite the party.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Okay, so I have to ask now. Who does Mary Boland finally hook up with?
I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, it's got to. I'm sure it's got to be. What was it, Daniel?
I don't think it's going to be Daniel.
Yeah,
you don't?
No, Daniel Kelly. Actually, Daniel Kelly reminded me immediately of Daniel Hugh Kelly, who is an actor. I figured, well, she's got to marry him. He's like drop-dead gorgeous.
I think they're going to take it from, because right near the end of the book where he gave her the ring.
The 5 years.
And she said, well, I can't make any promises. He said, that's all right. This is for when you're ready, but, you know, we're going to try.
Wasn't he cool the way he handled that?
He really was.
He was good. He was a good guy, but, you know, and not to give any of the story away, but there were certain things that you really, halfway through the book, you're thinking, this guy's going to be a jerk and this is no good for her. And why doesn't she leave him alone?
Right.
And then you realize what was going on, which made it really exciting.
Yeah.
It's funny. One of my editors really, really wanted her to end up with Kamoa, you know, the African slave boy that she met on the ship.
Right. Cam.
Yeah. Yeah, Cam.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I kind of thought that was going to be the direction that it went, but they also had different lives they were looking to lead. I mean, you know, Cam, his goal, he wanted to become wealthy. I mean,
he did.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, but back in 1849, that would have been an absolute no-no.
I know.
By the way, that was one thing that was really interesting to me is that when they were talking about when they first got into Boston, and they had the money, and they were, you know, they were buying things, like they were going to get a room, and they said the innkeeper says it'll be two bits. And I thought, wow, how cheap. And then I found out these were being ripped off. It only should have been like five cents.
With a bath.
Yeah, that's right.
With a bath, yeah.
That was really interesting.
Yeah, there was some sparkling tidbits you threw in there that really, really, really make this book shine.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. In fact, we had Jeannie Loicano on about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
And, I know you did. I didn't get to hear that. How was that?
She was absolutely just charming. She just charmed the pants out of everybody in here. She just was great.
Yeah, I thought she would be.
She's just a knowledgeable, fun lady to talk to. We kept her up late, too.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, incidentally, you have, I just sent out today, you have a Writer's Block coffee mug coming to your way.
Oh, thank you. I would like that.
Oh, good. Let me know if it makes it there in one piece. I just bought some new boxes
for it. I sure will.
And then you have to take a selfie with it and send it in so we can put it on the Facebook page.
Exactly. Then you have to take a selfie with your coffee cup so we can put it on our Facebook page.
I will.
And you'll be the first one that actually sends one in.
You want me to put it on your Facebook page or my Facebook page?
No, put it on mine. Yeah. Why don't you put it on both? What the hell?
Okay.
You did a column for a magazine, and it's funny, isn't it? And it seems to me that's now been put together, some sort of a booklet or something like that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I compiled a book of my columns. It's about 6 years old now, and I self-published those 6 years ago. And I have a very good friend here in Asheville, who's a very fine artist, and she did black and white drawings, you know, to kind of complement the columns or the, you know, the funny, isn't it, little essays I wrote.
Uh-huh.
And it's a lovely little book.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I actually did one a couple of years back. I do a column for our company newsletter called As I See It by Joe Parts. And I actually did a little booklet about all the columns over the years and some of the funny stuff. And hey, look, I'm going to cut you off here just for a minute. We're going to play a little music, and then we'll be back to you, and we'll resume the conversation.
Very good.
Okay. We'll talk to you in just a few.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we are back with Gene Charters in North Carolina, Asheville to be exact. And Russ, you had something you wanted to ask?
Yeah, Gene, I wanted to know a little bit about what your time was like with Viacom.
I was working actually out of a television station in upstate New York, and basically, it was kind of a weird time. I think I was a token, to tell you the truth. I was
a token Irish?
Huh?
Were you a token Irish?
No, I was a token female at Viacom.
Okay.
It was pretty much in those days, it was really a good old boys club.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, they have divested of all their television stations now. But at that time, they owned a bunch of them. And my job, I used to travel from television station to television station and put together special promotions and stuff like that, you know, for the stations. And it was just kind of a peculiar time. It wasn't the best time of my life. I was seeing a stress management psychologist at the time.
Really? Oh, my gosh. How long were you with them? How long were you with them?
I had that job for 4 years.
And that was about all you could take, huh?
That was about all I needed, yeah. And I mean, I liked the money, but I don't know. It just wasn't for me. And then when I left there and I started my own agency, I realized, oh, the freedom. My problem was I really am invested in my client's success. You know, if I have an advertiser, I really want them to be successful.
Sure.
And at that time, I don't think that's the case now, but at that time, that wasn't the case with that company. So it was just not a very happy time for me.
Well, I was kind of thinking that maybe being involved with the entertainment industry, that might have been the impetus for starting to think about the story and writing. But when did you really come up with this whole concept? I mean, you knew you wanted to write. But how did you decide this was the story? What got you going with it?
Well, it took me 10 years, okay? And actually, the first I've wrote three books in that time. The first book was called Daughters of Famine. And it was about, I did all three generations in one book. And it turned out to be 800 pages long, and you can't get that published as a first-time writer.
Mm.
So, yeah. And I had a lot of good writers around here, because there are a lot of good writers in Asheville, that told me each one of these women deserves her own book. So having queried about 1,000 agents, you know, I didn't get an agent for that one. So I wrote a second book, which was called The Wrong Woman, and in fact that was a novel about
me and picking the wrong woman.
The wrong woman.
Yeah, I know. I would say that's a story about my life, picking the wrong
really?
Woman.
Oh,
yes.
I'm so sorry. Well, this one was a story about the television industry, and it was about a highly principled television news director in Philadelphia who was getting a lot of pressure from her corporation to, you know, kind of like slant the news their direction. And that went nowhere. And then after all that, I thought, well, I'm going to go back and start over, and I'm going to write, you know, take the people's advice and just write the first book about the first girl. And that was Mary Boland, mm-hmm. and that's what you just read.
Right. Now, was this the first girl in the book that you wrote
Daughters
initially?
Of Famine? Yes, it was.
Okay. And so you kind of took parts of that story and then put it into its own piece.
Yes. Yes. I didn't really lift a lot out of that. You know what? I haven't even gone back and revisited that manuscript. I kind of started fresh and just started writing again. Because in the, like, for instance, in the first one, I open that novel with this girl sitting on the Irish, you know, on the hillside, looking out at the Irish Sea and rhapsodizing about how beautiful it was and everything. And that's not really a great way to start a novel, I found out later. You're supposed to start your novel at a time of great change for the protagonist. And so that's why I started with Mary Boland, you know, leaving her home mm-hmm. and walking to the Cork Harbor.
Yeah, so
Ross dying.
Yeah, because there were a lot of things that had already transpired in her life, which you brought up briefly, that brought her to that point where she was looking to leave.
Right, right. And you know what I think is interesting? Have you seen the movie Brooklyn?
No.
It's up for an Oscar. And it's really good. And it's about a girl coming over from Ireland to America in 1950. And I think it's kind of interesting that my book is about a girl coming over to America from Ireland in 1850.
All right.
Not that has anything to do with anything. I just thought that was good.
Well, if her name was Mary Boland, that'd be kind of coincidence.
Yeah.
That would be really.
let me ask you something about your writing technique.
Okay.
The name of the show is The Writer's Block. Did you ever get writer's block while writing this book?
I've gotten more writer's block in writing the second book, in writing Lace Curtain, than I ever did in writing Shady Gold. Shady Gold was like, I don't know, it just kind of came to me at night, you know? Mm-hmm. I just kind of knew the right way. And if I'd write something about Mary Boland, and if it didn't seem correct to either her or me, I'd hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew it.
Mm-hmm.
I have gotten a lot of writer's block with the second book, although it's going faster than the first one did. Mm-hmm.
But do you think that possibly you're thinking about trying to live up to the expectation that was there for the first one?
Oh, absolutely. Of course.
Yeah.
And that makes you, maybe you have to question your own thoughts on how you're developing that story. And, well, maybe this is not right because I didn't do it that way before and it worked in the other book.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, when people are telling you that they loved your first book and that it's that they're really enjoying it and all the stuff I'm hearing about that book, you know, I figure with the next book, they're going to say, boy, that one stinks. I do. I think every writer has that fear.
Well, that happens. That happens, you know.
It does. I think every writer is wants to give their audience a better story every time they have a book come out.
You know, even if
it's the same people, they want to give them, you want to keep upping your game on every book. Every book has to be a little bit better, a little bit different, a little more meat to it. And it's hard to keep that up. And I totally get that.
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, if you write a song or if you write whatever, you know, if you have a hit with your first song that you ever write or something, you're always afraid you're not going to live up to that.
Well, yeah,
that's perfectly normal, I think, you know, and you can't really lay that on yourself. You have to write your book, and some people won't like it. Some people won't like it as well as Shanty Gold. Some people may like it better than Shanty Gold.
Right, right.
I can't really be responsible for all that. All I can do is write the book.
Right. That's what my creative writer teacher said. All you can do is write your story.
That's right.
So
that's right. And I think that's totally true.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
There's something that I noticed in this book, and I don't want to make this it's not a criticism. It's just something I noticed because I really did enjoy the book. I couldn't have sat down and read it in 4 hours had I not enjoyed it. But as I was reading through I would say maybe about the first third of the book, I felt that there was a lot of dialogue, but I didn't feel that you spent time describing the scenes, what I was looking at. I understood.
Right.
I mean, I understood what was going on and the exchange of ideas and thoughts between the characters, but I wasn't. It was all my imagination as far as what I was seeing, as far as the setting. But then the book took a turn to where you were much more descriptive about the settings and the situations. And I was just wondering if that was, I mean, that was just something I noticed. I don't know if anybody else has, but I just kind of felt that way. And maybe that's why it grabbed me more after I got into it. And then I didn't want to stop.
Right, right.
Well, you know, it's funny. I don't know. Kirkus reviews, you know, they're the tough reviewers. And that was a criticism they came up with, and I think it's valid, that it was a great, it was a good book, but it could have been a great book had I placed, had I done more with the setting, you know, with the, and I think that's true. Frankly, I get very bored with a lot of description. I like a story. I really feel that I'm a really good storyteller. Mm-hmm. I'm not the greatest writer in the world, but I'm a really good storyteller. And I think I go light on description.
Well, you know, I mean, you did, there's a couple descriptions that you did that were just absolutely phenomenal. One of them was on the coffin ship.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When they're
oh, yeah.
hiding out. I mean, you, I could actually see them and smell that
the
boat.
The smell. That
oh,
was the
God.
Thing.
It was. I mean, I could sit here and smell it and go,
you
oh.
did. You described the smells in that ship so much that I thought, oh, how could people even exist in oh, this?
It was horrible.
Yeah.
And yeah. then and then hitting the Boston Harbor and smelling the salt air and the effluence in the water. And
the fish.
And the dead fish floating against the side of the boats and... And it was just, I mean, you know, that I could vividly see. And that was very, very, very well done. Then yeah. you move into Kathleen Halloran. Oh, my God, what a character. I wanted her to be real. I really did.
And she was awesome.
I wanted her to be a real woman, that there was really a portrait. Here I'm online looking to see if there's really a portrait of this woman. And there wasn't. I was really distressed.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, look. Look on Amazon. You'll see her. She's on the cover of the book on
oh,
Amazon.
Oh, is she?
You can see her if you look there.
But she was just a wonderful character. I mean, out of all the characters in your book, and they're all fairly good, I think Kathleen Halloran probably...
Oh, Kathleen. Oh, yeah. Didn't you love her?
She took the medal. She got it.
Yeah. Because I loved her,
she
too.
Adopted both those kids, and that was just amazing to me. She didn't care about
well,
color
think,
or anything.
Yeah, she was a big, loud, strong Irish woman,
yep.
and I just loved her.
Yep, me
yeah.
too. Me
and
too.
She was kind of, really, kind of like a 1990s gal
right.
set in 1850.
Right, right.
And she
yeah.
had all the thoughts about how women should be and how she knew her place and how to manipulate men. And she says, watch, if you ever have them, you know, she told, she said,
Mary.
If you ever, yeah, she told Mary, if you ever have a time when you need to get your guy to do certain things, let me show you how to manipulate him. And she was a master.
And then
at
she
that.
Goes to Tommy and just makes him melt.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because she could scold him.
What did you guys think of Agnes Dooley?
Oh, I didn't like her at all.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I didn't like her at all. I didn't like her at the start, and I thought at the end she turned out to be okay, but she just wasn't my cup of tea.
She would have been, okay. No, but I, you know what? I've known women like that, and it's, unfortunately, I think our society today produces way too many women that are like that.
Yeah, maybe, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. Yeah, she was... Well, I tried to forgive her, you know, for being such a monster, because of the way her mother was to her on the ship. You know, I mean, the mother was horrible to that little girl. So that's what happens when a woman is brought up that way. But actually, you know, there was a whole lot of emerging feminism going on
right.
back then.
Well, I mean, Agnes certainly did figure it out. I mean, she knew that, you know, her wiles would pay her bills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she made it work for her. And, you know, God bless her. But, whoa, what a snot.
Yeah, she was nasty. She was nasty.
She was nasty.
I was thinking back to Kathleen O'Halloran with the feminism, because she truly was a feminist, you know.
Yes, she was. She, I mean, you know, take no offense. She had stainless steel balls. I mean, this woman,
yes,
she could do anything.
Yes, she did. I think most of the best women do.
Well, I think you're probably right. And with that, we're going to have to start backing out of here. Why don't you give us your contact information, Jean, if you would, please, your email and where they can reach you.
Okay. My email address is jcharters@bellsouth.net. My website is jeancharters.com. That's JEANE charters.com. And do you need my mailing address?
No, I have that. Besides that, we would never want to say that on the air.
But where can everybody find your book if they want to get it?
You can get it at Amazon.com. You can get it in some bookstores. I don't know what bookstores out in California, to tell you the truth.
Don't have many left.
Yeah.
But Amazon is probably your best bet.
Uh-huh. And you have also, you can buy them off your website.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
You could buy them right off my website.
There you go.
JeaneCharters.com.
JeaneCharters.com. Well, Jeanne, thank you so much for coming in and joining us. And I know it's late for you now. It's what, almost midnight?
That's okay. I've enjoyed this.
Well, great. And, you know, when you get that coffee cup, just when you sit there and take that selfie, think, ha-ha, writer's
block. I promise you I will.
Thanks. Thanks again. And when I talk to Jeanne Loicano, I'll let her know that we had you on. And I think I already told
Please
her you were
going
to be here. And that you were a delight.
Yes. Okay, good.
And thanks so much for joining us.
Oh,
you're very
welcome.
Thank you.
Good night.
Enjoy.
Good night.
Good night.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Jeanne Charters. Interesting lady.
Well, I'm going to give the book definitely a recommendation.
Oh, for sure.
But the biggest thing that I would say about it is that, you know, take two or three chapters to get into it first.
Yes. Because don't give up on it.
Yeah, because a little of the dialect, the Irish brogue is going to be a little difficult at first. But if you just, once you get past that, it flows and it really keeps you going all the way through.
It really did. And like I said, once I got really into the rhythm of the book, and I just did not want to put it down.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted the next chapter, and I wanted the next chapter, and I wanted the next chapter, and I have to see where she goes from here. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, when they destroyed her clinic, then, spoiler alert. And never mind. Hey, next week, we have Bobby Jeanne back in studio. Russ will be doing his Russ Avison thing.
Right.
We have Jack Martin, who is a historical fiction author. He writes historical fiction with a little bit of gothic twist. What that means, I guess we'll find out next week. I do have a book of his to read, so I'll try to get through that this weekend. The following week is going to be a real fun week. On Wednesday at 10 o'clock in the morning, on Channel 1 on LA Talk Radio, Bobby Jeanne and I will be on Sam's show, Sam in the Morning. And we'll be talking about whatever we want to talk about. God only knows with Sam what he wants to talk about.
You can tell him what you really think of him.
I just did. earlier, before you got here.
Oh, okay.
And then the following day, on the 10th, this is going to be a real fun show because Russ was here when we had the horse sluts on.
Yes.
And Ken Dacey Wade from the Horse Sluts will be in studio with us, along with Ken LaSalle. And Ken LaSalle didn't get the whole hour, so we're going to give him another hour later on in the year, because I kind of think that Ken Dacey's probably going to bogart some of the shows.
They were fun, though.
They were a fun group, and Ken Dacey by herself is a hoot. So it'll be a real fun evening. And Ken, I hope that you totally get this, and give me a call during the week sometime. Okay. Russ, you got anything to say? Any announcements you want to make?
No.
No?
I'm happy.
Are you?
Yes. From Charlotte's Web, I don't know if anybody saw that, but as I would like to say, the rat is happy.
Oh, I saw Charlotte's Web, actually.
Do you remember the little rat?
Yes.
And he got that egg. He took the egg from under the chicken, and he pushed it, and got it down in the hole, and he looked at the egg, and he just sat down, and he goes, the rat is happy.
Yeah. It's like Rizzo leading the cruises on the Muppet movie, the pirate movie.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you can see Forsaken with Kiefer and Donald Sutherland, great, great, great movie. Good luck to Bobby Jeanne tonight on her West concert series. I'm hoping that they have a great time with their Cowboy Bebop. I still have to look that up. I have no idea what that is. And with that being said, we're going to close this show out. We'll see you next Thursday. Thanks for joining us on The Writer's Block.